This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
And this is Jason Staples here for another episode of the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. Today we're going to be talking about whether the Florida State defense is truly an elite defense. That's our first segment. And then the second segment, we're going to be joined by Jody Demling from CardinalAuthority.com and the Cardinal Insider Radio Show to talk Florida State Louisville. So let's go ahead and get started on the first segment where we're going to be asking the question, is the Florida State defense an elite defense at this point? And it's an interesting question. I mean, this is a Florida State defense that has managed to hold opposing teams to 14 points per game so far this season. And, you know, that's against FBS competition, which is good for sixth in the country. So it's certainly, in terms of scoring defense, right up there. But again, the question is not whether this is a highly ranked scoring defense, but whether this is an elite defense. And I think the answer to that question is no. I don't think at this point this Florida State defense is an elite defense. Now, that said, I don't think there are many elite defenses in the country. So I think the key here is to talk about what we mean by an elite defense. Now, I would say that an elite defense is a defense lacking any really significant weaknesses and one that's able to dictate to the offense by making that offense, whatever offense it's facing, one-dimensional in some way. So able to take away whatever that offense does best and force that offense to win left-handed, effectively. That's the old defensive coordinator's way of talking about that. You never want a team to beat you with what they do well. If Georgia Tech can beat you with the dive, you're in trouble. If Washington State can beat you with the mesh play, you're in trouble. You've got to be able to make a team, got to be able to force them out of what they're comfortable with. And elite defenses can do that against just about anybody. So I would say that elite defenses are teams that have the ability to limit teams and force teams to beat them with what they don't do well, and teams without significant defensive weaknesses. And I don't think that this Florida State offense is there yet. Their Florida State defense, I'm sorry, is there yet. I don't think they're quite to that point. And give you a good example. I think that the 2013 Florida State defense was an elite defense. I don't think there's any real question to that. They were first in the nation in scoring defense at 12.6 points per game. They were one of the tops in the country in yards per play, as I recall, looking at that now. I know this isn't good radio to look this up on the fly, but they were number two in the country in yards per play at 4.09 yards per play, which is absurd. So those numbers were really, really good. And opponent adjusted, they were the number one defense in the country by advanced metrics and so on. So led the nation in scoring defense against FBS competition, number two in yards per play. And when you adjust for opponent, they were number one basically across the board. That was an elite defense. And when I'm talking about what an elite defense looks like, let's think about that. That 2015 defense, let's think about, or 2013 defense, let's think about what you're going to do to make that, to force that defense into bad situations. Where are you going to try to get a good matchup? Let's say that you're Miami from this year, and you have 4 or 5 solid wide receivers with speed to burn, and you're going to try to get a mismatch in that secondary against that 2013 Florida State defense. Which guy are you going to try to match up against to get a mismatch? Jalen Ramsey? No. Terrence Brooks? No. LaMarcus Joyner? No. Ron Darby? No. PJ Williams? No. That's 5 guys, and then you go to nickel, and you got Nate Andrews coming in. Where are you going to get your mismatch? Oh, you're going to try to get a running back lined up against a linebacker in coverage. Oh, you're going to ask your running back to beat Telvin Smith in coverage. Good luck. Or Terrence Smith. Good luck. Healthy Terrence Smith at that. So, you know, you look at the back seven there, and there was no... Not only were there limited weaknesses where, you know, your weakness wasn't significant, they didn't have a weakness in the back seven. That's one of the reasons why that's one of the best defenses in modern college football history. And I think one of the... I think that that defense set the standard for defending spread offenses because they just didn't have any weaknesses in the back seven. And then, oh, we're going to run the football on them. Oh, you're going to try to push around Timmy Jernigan and a motivated Mario Edwards Jr. and a motivated and not overweight Eddie Goldman, along with a back with backups of, you know, McAllister and McDaniel and Nile Lawrence Stample. And Christian Jones on that outside, you're going to try to run on them with those linebackers behind him. So again, they could take the running game away when they wanted to, and they could do that with their defensive line because those linebackers were so good. And then if you tried to get a matchup on them in the secondary, those matchups weren't available. So at the end of the day, that's what an elite defense looks like, where you just don't have significant weaknesses that an offense can pick at. And I think this is where the 2015 Florida State team just isn't quite there. There are a few weaknesses. There are a few places that they're having to hide guys. They're having to make sure that they don't put certain players in certain situations to make sure that they don't get into positions where some of those weaknesses can be taken advantage of. And we saw that against Miami. We're looking at a team that in Miami, they've got an unusually deep group of wide receivers. There's no doubt about that. But they were able, especially after Trey Marshall's ejection, which did, of course, change the balance of things in the secondary a little bit, but they were able to scheme in that game to put a guy like Stacy Coley one-on-one with Tyler Hunter. And listen, this is not a time to bash Tyler Hunter. Tyler Hunter's a better player than a lot of people out there seem to think. Tyler Hunter, he made a couple mistakes here and there, but by and large, he's actually a good player. And he's a reliable player that you want on the field most of the time, but you don't necessarily want him one-on-one against a motivated and focused Stacy Coley. And, you know, that's not the only weakness there. I mean, if they're able to get Trey Marshall in one-on-one coverage going down the field, he's not at this point a guy that you really trust to cover one-on-one against a top wide receiver. You can go down the line. There are mismatches to be had. If you get Reggie Northrop in coverage against a really really fast running back or a slot receiver or something, Reggie's a tremendous downhill linebacker, plays very well in the box, but, you know, he's coming off a knee injury and he wasn't a great coverage linebacker before that. And when Terrence Smith gets back, you know, the question is how healthy he's going to be off that ankle. And then, you know, you go down the line, there are places where this defense has to be careful on how aggressive it gets because it has a few weaknesses that if it gets over aggressive could potentially give up big plays. Now, what I will say is I think that the defensive staff has done a tremendous job of putting personnel in positions this year where they're not put in bad situations. Late in that Miami game, they did a good job of, again, taking away some of those mismatches. They did a good job of taking away some of the ability to formation into a one-on-one with Coley and Hunter. So again, some of that had to do with Coley taking himself out of the game. But, you know, you start to look, this defense, LaMarcus Brutus is a nice player, but he's not a high-round NFL draft pick. Same thing with Hunter. He's a good player, but he's not LaMarcus Joyner. He's not Jalen Ramsey at that position. So there are players that are in position right now that, you know, Roderick Hoskins, very good player. He's really played extremely well at linebacker, but as a coverage linebacker, he's still learning in pattern matching stuff underneath. He's still learning. So, you know, when you start going through this team, I think they're maximizing at this point in the season. They're learning how to maximize what they do by this staff doing a good job of minimizing where their weaknesses are. Now, where I do think they're elite, I think they've got a pair of corners that's as good as any pair of corners in the country outside of Gainesville. With the way Marquez White and, you know, obviously you know what you've got in Jalen Ramsey, with the way those guys have played on the outside, they're forcing teams to beat you with the slot, with the tight end, and with the running back. And that's a big advantage. That makes this defense a very good defense. And I've always said that you give me quality, you give me great defensive tackles and great corners, and I'll give you a great defense. Well, this defense has quality defensive tackles at this point with Derek Nnadi, Niall Lawrence-Stample, DeMarcus Christmas in particular, and then Derek Mitchell also coming in. So you got four guys that you can rotate and trust at that defensive tackle position, and they've been rotating as many as six. And you got three that are real playmakers on the inside there at that defensive tackle position. And then you've got two outstanding cornerbacks. So you're not just going to be able to run the football straight down this team's throat, and you're not just going to be able to beat them over the top with your best wide receiver on the outside a whole lot. You're going to lose more than you're going to win against Ramsey and Marquez White. So that's where this defense is really strong. And then elsewhere, they're still learning. They're still getting to the place where they're not quite dominant on the inside. You know, those defensive ends, Josh Sweat has been an unbelievable true freshman contributor so far, especially given what he came off of with that catastrophic knee injury last year. More than anybody could have expected coming in. But again, you're looking at a guy that's really a year away from being a dominant defensive end. And I think he will be a dominant defensive end. And you add a dominant defensive end to this defense, and it's one step closer to being elite. When Terrence Smith is healthy at that linebacker position, he's close to a dominant linebacker, especially as a coverage guy. But he's not healthy. He's not even playing right now. Jacob Pugh is a good player on the edge. He's not a dominant player. So I think this defense is really, at this point, two or three dominant players, you know, elite level players from being an elite defense. But the question then goes from, is this an elite defense, which I don't think it is. And, you know, again, we can go to the stats here as well. You know, you go to the S&P plus ratings, opponent adjusted, advanced statistic. It's a pretty good defensive statistic in terms of measuring defensive efficiency. You know, how well your defense is able to keep opposing offenses from accomplishing their goals play by play and limiting explosive plays and scoring and you know, all the things that you want to do as a defense. And Florida State so far, adjusted for opponent, has been the number 12 defensive S&P plus team. That's pretty good. I wouldn't call it elite yet. They're in the same, by the way, in the same breath, they're you know, 1.2 points back in their rating system from University of Florida at 9. And Florida's pretty close to an elite defense. Interesting to see the ACC highly represented in this. Boston College is number 3. Actually, pretty short trip behind Alabama and Michigan. Then you have Duke at number 5 and Clemson at number 6. And Clemson's been close to an elite defense this year. Duke is not quite there at 5. So I would say really at this point, you only have maybe 2 or 3 truly elite defenses in the country. Boston College might be. I think Michigan and Alabama have played as such, outside of Alabama giving up a couple just ludicrous plays against Ole Miss. So that said, while this is not, I don't think, an elite defense, it might well be a top 10 or 12 defense in the country, which, if you've got a top 10 or 12 defense, and particularly a top 10 or 12 defense that's good enough, like a Florida State, like this current Florida State defense, at not giving up big plays, then you may not have an elite defense like that 2013 Florida State defense or the 2011 Alabama defense, but you've got a defense good enough, especially against Florida State's schedule, to contend for a playoff if you've got a decent offense. So I don't think it's an elite defense, but I think it's good enough, and there's enough upside on this defense for this to be a very good, a maybe probably top 10 defense in the country by the end of the year. And I think as some of these guys get healthy again, as you get Nate Andrews back, as you and when Nate Andrews is on the field in the dime package and he's healthy, and you've got Terrence Smith next to him in the dime package, and they're both healthy, that dime package is pretty close to elite in terms of the personnel you're putting on the field. Now, again, there are a couple weaknesses, you know, that you might be able to pick at in terms of matchups that you couldn't, you know, you couldn't against a team like 2013. Of course, it's kind of unfair to measure against an all-time defense. But that dime defense, when they're healthy, is really close to elite. And as Derwin James gets on the field a little bit more, he's one of those difference makers. That, you know, like I said, this team is maybe two or three difference makers away from being an elite defense. Derwin James might be one more difference maker, that guy, by the end of the year. Again, as Josh Sweat gets further away from that knee injury, gets closer to being fully healthy, you know, you can, against Miami, it was his best game of the year. He's getting better each week. As those guys get there, if, you know, you get a couple guys that make the leap to being dominant players and not just very good players, and you get, you know, a guy that like Derwin James on the field more and let him become a dominant player, and now you might have, by the end of the year, you could have, if not an elite defense, one that's just a tick short of an elite defense. So they're not at this point. Certainly not with the injuries, with Terrence Smith out, with Nate Andrews out, the lack of depth. Right now they have three healthy linebackers on the roster. You're not going to be an elite defense with that. But by the end of the year, this team could be pretty close to an elite defense if injury luck works, if certain things develop, if some guys return and there's some development. So that's the thing to keep an eye on, is whether or not there continues to be improvement here. The one thing we know is that this defense doesn't give up a lot of big plays. And you can go pretty far with that. And you are listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and I'm here joined by Jody Demling from CardinalAuthority.com and from the Cardinal Insider Radio Show. Jody, thanks for joining us here for a brief look at Louisville, Florida State.
No problem. Should be a fun week. I know Louisville's excited about it. They're actually going to leave today. They're leaving Thursday night, so they're getting there a little early than normal for the new game on Saturday.
Yeah, that's something Florida State's been doing a little bit for the last couple of years. I think since 2013, they've been getting to road games a day early just to sort of acclimate and get used to being on the road a little bit. And Fisher really feels like that's actually been a benefit for them. So it'll be interesting to see whether Louisville sticks with this and whether that makes an impact in this game. Of course, it's an early game, so that probably is doubly important for a game where you're going to be on the field by 10:30 or so to start warm-ups, right, and so on. So,
and it's going to be a humid. I think it's going to be a hot, humid day, and it hasn't been here. So I think they'll go somewhere on Friday and get a little walkthrough in, and just to get a little. You know, they're not going to get adjusted to the heat with a walkthrough, but at least to get used to it a little bit.
Yeah, that's something that Jimbo Fisher mentioned earlier this week, that he was kind of hoping that later in the game, as things got into, you know, the 2 o'clock hour, that area, you know, you're getting into the fourth quarter area, that maybe the humidity would have an impact on a Louisville team that hasn't seen as much of that kind of weather at this point, whereas, you know, Florida State's more used to that. In any case, let's get right to it and talking about where Louisville is at this point in the year. Obviously not in the win-loss column what Louisville fans had hoped for this year, and certainly not what I had expected at this point this year. I thought they had a really good chance of beating Auburn in the first game, which really they should have beaten, they should have won that game, and then a close loss against a better than expected Tom Herman coached Houston team, and then another fairly close loss against what's turning out to be a very good Clemson team on a short week. So three really close losses, but I don't know that, that Louisville is any worse than what anybody expected coming into the year. They're still a, they've got to be the best three-loss team in the country at this point.
Yeah, you know, I mean, those three losses are by 13 points, and like you said, to them, the most disappointing one of them, obviously, was Houston, because they should have been and could have won the game a number of times. But that Houston team is a lot better than I think most people thought they were. Like I said, 13 points in those three losses, and with a team that's so young, you know, I mean, they have 11 guys. They had the same amount of guys drafted in the NFL last year, the NFL draft last year, as Florida State did, and that was the most of anybody in the country. So they had a lot to replace, even though they had some names coming back. They still had a lot to replace, and early on, the quarterback thing was just a disaster for Louisville early on. You know, in the first four games, they had four different guys start, and until Lamar Jackson stepped up and kind of took that step forward and showed that he could be that guy, it was a quarterback carousel, and you're never going to have too much success once you do that.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, is it never looked to me, or especially early on, I mean, frankly, quarterback play in the first half cost Louisville the game against Auburn. I mean, I think anybody who watched that game knows that. And it looked early on to me like Bobby Petrino was just not comfortable calling plays for the quarterbacks that he had in terms of, it looked like they were trying to run two or three different offenses and didn't really have a sense of who they were going to be, because, you know, what they wanted to run with Bonifon was different than what they'd run with Jackson. And then, you know, you had the other guys that were in there, and nothing looked really cohesive. And it just looked very hodgepodgey, which is so unusual for a Petrino offense. But now that Jackson's there, I think we saw against NC State, we started to see that growth at this point on the Louisville offense, that they now have an identity and I think are much more dangerous on offense as a result. And so can you talk about a little bit about what Lamar Jackson's brought to the table and how that's brought some change then to the Louisville offense?
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing. They do, you know, Lamar Jackson is their identity now, and it's him with his team. He's as fast as any quarterback I've seen in person, well, ever in person. And I mean, he just, it's crazy when he hits that hole and you know, like he did in that NC State game, and guys that have angles on him, and he just goes right by them. You know, I mean, his high school coach made, and I know Florida State recruited him, and it came down to Louisville in Florida, and he had a dynamic high school career. His high school coach made the remark when he committed last year to me that, this kid will start next year for Louisville, and everybody kind of like laughed, like, oh yeah, freshman, and that kind of thing. But, you know, when he got here, they really, really liked him. It was always just a matter of, I think Bobby was a little hesitant of putting a freshman that runs the ball as much as he does in that situation. But when it came down to it, they figured out that, you know, with the line that's not great, with some good wide receivers, they were dinged up early on in the wide receiver group with some veterans. The best thing that they could do was go ahead and say, Lamar, this is your team. And he brings a dynamic to this team that a Bobby Petrino offense really hasn't had. I mean, Stephon LeFord, back in the day when Bobby was here the first time, was a running quarterback. But Lamar Jackson's already set a single-season record in just playing four games, a single-season record for rushing for a quarterback in Louisville history. So it's something that Louisville fans and that Bobby Petrino hasn't seen before. With that said, his passing hasn't been great. Now, they say he's making some major strides in the open, during the open week. But that was the big deal for him, is he's got a great arm, he just doesn't always know how to use it.
Yeah, it seemed to me that he's got a big arm and can challenge defenses downfield over the top a little bit, but it's on that intermediate stuff that, you know, he's still got to learn how to throw some of that stuff. And also the inexperience at wide receiver that Louisville's had has also, I think, been a factor in the passing game so far. And that's where having that open date to be able to work through some of those issues probably has had some impact.
Right, and they've got James Quick, their veteran wide receiver, the most veteran receiver they have. They have him back. He was back to the NC State game and is is now fully healthy. Jamari Staples is, you know, the transfer from UAB. I mean, they were expected to be maybe their best target, maybe their best wide receiver. He missed the first four games, is now back. So they're getting healthy there. Their running game is not great, but it's getting better, and Lamar's getting more comfortable. And I think the biggest factor of it all is the backup quarterback, Reggie Bonifon, is now one of those guys, and you don't see many of them, but he's one of those guys that, for lack of a better way to explain it, like Bobby Petrino said, he's kind of that Braxton Miller role, and I think everybody compares it to that, where Reggie can, he's in there at some quarterback, they've lined him up at wide receiver, they've lined him up at running back, they pitch the ball to him, he's thrown out of a pitch. I mean, he's a guy who can do so many things, and he might not be the best option for them at the quarterback position to start, but when it comes to goal line situations, when it's short yardage, he's going to be the guy who's going to be in the game for Louisville to let Lamar, make sure Lamar doesn't make a freshman mistake or something that he's not comfortable with. And I think with Reggie and Lamar and the dynamic and the setup that they have right now, I think it really makes their offense a lot better, and it gives Bobby maybe like to just take a deep breath and start calling some things, because I think you're right. I think early on he was hesitant to call anything because he was so worried about the youth of this offense and having a young quarterback.
Yeah, and I would call what they've been doing with Reggie Bonifon the old Cordell Stewart slash role.
Right.
Where he's in that, he's doing everything, and again, that adds one more playmaker where you've got a guy who, you know, Bonifon is a really good athlete. He's a big kid and he can move. So that adds that extra dimension. You know, they like at Louisville with Petrino's always like to run a lot of shallow cross type stuff, and you put the ball in the playmaker's hands and let him move. So it'd be interesting to see how they actually use him now that they've sort of established who they're going to be offensively and all that coming out of this open date. Now
right.
the
right.
biggest well, that, the go ahead.
The crazy thing is they've wanted to do this the whole year. Even when Reggie started, they had the idea. The very first play of the year from scrimmage, Lamar Jackson was in there in kind of a wildcat, wild card, whatever you want to call it, kind of situation, and he threw the interception on the very first play of the year. And Bobby Petrino still to this day says, if that snap isn't, the snap was, it was an issue with the snap, and the snap came too early, and Lamar kind of freaked out. And Bobby still to this day says, if that snap isn't too early, that's a touchdown pass to Reggie Bonifon going on the backside, because the Auburn guys totally been on the wild card. It was just that Lamar was kind of running scared because it was his first collegiate play. He wasn't expecting the ball, and he had, 11 Auburn defensive guys coming at him. So they wanted to do this the whole time.
Yeah, and that cost him the first play of the game cost him that game. I mean, for all intents and purposes. Now, the one thing that Auburn offense has struggled all year has been on the offensive line, and that's where having Lamar Jackson and that speed back there has been a big deal. But they've given up a lot of sacks. And they've struggled particularly on the interior from what I've seen. How have they developed over the last few weeks? Because I know especially early in the year they were really struggling up front.
Well, they've moved some guys around. They're now starting three freshmen. Their two tackles are true freshmen. Kenny Thomas at one tackle out of Alabama, and then the other tackle is Jerron Christian. Gerald Christian, their tight end from last year, his brother. So they're starting two true freshman tackles. Christian started the whole year, but they've moved Thomas in there because they think he gives them a better option. And then they've also moved Lucas McNeil, who is a redshirt freshman, into the starting lineup at one of the guards. So they're a little different than they have been. This will be the first time all year that they start the same line in consecutive weeks and they stick with it, because I think that you'll see, the same guys start that we saw last week. So I think they're going to get better. They're just so young.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see with that youth how they handle a pretty decent Florida State defensive line. I mean, that defensive line has shown itself to be pretty good so far. I mean, they dominated an average Miami offensive line. It'll be interesting to see how that transpires. Now, let's flip over to the defensive side really quick before we go. That's really Louisville's strength this year. And just like it was last year, despite losing a lot of NFL talent, as you mentioned earlier, this team wound up bringing back quite a bit. I mean, Sheldon Rankins is one of, if not the best, interior defensive linemen in the country. And then you have a couple guys that were added to this defense, three high-profile transfers. I mean, this is the year of the transfer in college football between Everett Golson and even, you know, you go back to Jake Coker and Vernon Adams out at Oregon. But nobody's benefited more than really Florida State and Louisville because of Golson, and then Louisville on defense with Josh Harvey Clemens at the safety position. You have Shaq Wiggins at the cornerback position, and Devontae Fields, former Big 12 Player of the Year, at that outside linebacker position. Those are three NFL guys that were added just through transfer. Can you take us through a little bit of what we've seen the last couple weeks from, and as the year has gone on, from the Louisville defense? Because I noticed Fields didn't look as comfortable first week, but then when I watched him last game against NC State, he was much more of a wrecking crew, like what I'd expected in that game. So can you take us through a little bit of the growth on that side of the ball?
Yeah, Todd Grantham said it took a little longer for Fields. And, you know, he said, you know, people don't realize, you know, when you're in a junior college, it's a lot different competition. And to get back to this level, it took Fields a little longer than they anticipated or hoped that it would. But he is, the last 2 weeks has been much better. And is still improving, and they think the best is still yet to come from him. When you look at Josh Harvey Clemens has been really good all year. They move him around so much, and you know, really, when it comes down to it, he's one of their best. You know, one of their best, if not their best, defensive players overall because he doesn't make mistakes. And Shaq Wiggins is a guy who, you know, when you see him, you think, not how can this guy make so many plays, but he just does. He makes play after play after play, and it's been good for them. But you're right, Rankins is the guy in the front, and when he's doing his thing, this defense is really good. And the linebackers are as good as any of the Louisville's has had. James Burgess and Keith Kelsey just make play after play after play, and it's all over the field. You know, so while this defense lost a lot from last year, they've got a lot of guys, a lot of playmaking ability, and they're doing what Todd Grantham had hoped that they would do from early on. And you know, early on, everybody said, well, maybe it's not as good as what they wanted to be. You know, they were playing the good competition early on, and they were also playing from behind. And that was a thing. They got way behind in the Auburn game and just never felt comfortable on defense. The Houston game was, as Todd Grantham said, that was the game that he tried to throw away. That was the game that they didn't play their best. You know, even in the Clemson game, the defense did their part in the Clemson game and really did a good job against Deshaun Watson in that offense. And, you know, that's kind of the one that he hangs his hat on that where they showed their marked improvement. But they've gotten better each week, and they've got guys that can make plays on this defense.
Yeah, and they forced a lot of turnovers. I mean, 9 interceptions in 5 games, 12 total turnovers. I mean, this has been a defense that hasn't just stopped teams. This has been a defense that's created opportunities for the offense that, and unfortunately, with the youth and all of that on the offensive side early on, they weren't always able to take advantage of. But, you know, Harvey Clemens in particular has stuck out to me as a guy who, you know, he's got 2 interceptions on the year, 2 big interceptions, several pass breakups. There have been guys, Tremaine Washington, another guy with a couple picks. They've ball hawked quite a bit, and how do you think they're going to match up in that sense with what they're going to see from Florida State, which is a Florida State team that, you know, Dalvin Cook is the stir that straws the straw that stirs the drink for Florida State. You know, they've got to run the football a little bit, and Golson has shown in the past, at least, he hasn't turned it over this year. He's shown in the past that he can be prone to a turnover here or there. How do you think that defense is going to match up against this Florida State offense from what you've seen?
Well, you know, Todd Grantham told us yesterday that, you know, it's not a big deal that we've seen him before, but it is familiarity. You know, they saw him last year. was a 31-28 game. I think he threw a couple of picks in that. Well, Gerard Holloman got a pick, seemed like, every game last year. threw a couple of picks. I mean, Louisville had a 17-game streak snapped at NC State where they had an interception in 17 straight games. And that says something about this defense and the mentality. And you're right, they just go after. They really try to force turnovers. They try to, you know, strip balls. They try to ball hawk. They try to be physical. And, they feel like, that Cook is obviously the key, but they'd really like to somehow bait Golson into a couple turnovers and they would feel much better. But they, as Todd Grantham said, it's a fast offense, but we like to play fast on defense. And, defensively, they're pretty confident that they can come in and keep this team in the game. It's just a matter of can the offense score touchdowns.
Yeah, I think that right there, those are your two keys, as far as I'm concerned, is can the Louisville offense cash in on its opportunities against a good Florida State defense, and can that defense force a turnover to and limit Cook enough? And if they can do that, then I think Louisville can win this game. So I know you got to go here in a moment, so let's go ahead and wrap this with what you actually see. What's your expectation for this game coming from the Louisville side, and we'll wrap with that.
Yeah, I mean, my expectation is kind of what we just said. I think the defense will keep them in the game. I think they'll try to limit, Cook and slow him as much as possible. And Todd Grantham said he's one of the best backs he's seen in person in a long, long time. So they know how good he is and how explosive he is. But I think they'll try to limit him. I think they'll do some things with the linebackers. And, Shelton Rankins can have a good game up front. I think that the linebackers will be able to do some work there in the middle. I think the defense does limit Florida State in this game, but I just see Louisville having a hard time scoring. I mean, I think, I guess it never really thought about a low-scoring game, but I guess it could be a low-scoring game. It could be one of those, 17-9 or 21-10, something like that. But I know Louisville's coming there very confident and very excited and thinking that they can, they feel like they hung, they hung with Clemson and probably really should have beaten Clemson.
Yep.
if you get down to it here on a Thursday night, and they feel like if they did that they can do the same thing with Florida State.
Yeah, I think that's entirely – what you're saying is basically the same sort of thing that I'm expecting. I'm expecting a lower-scoring game that probably hinges on a couple key plays. And this, I think, is a really dangerous game for Florida State. Coming off of an emotional win against Miami, it being a noon game, which, those are a little bit of snoozers early on sometimes, as players try to wake up. And with a couple plays here and there, I think this Louisville team could very well beat this Florida State team. And I think it's going to be interesting. I'm very interested to see what teams come out, because I think this is going to set the tone, I think, for the rest of the season in a lot of ways for both teams. So, I do think the edge goes to the team with a little bit more experience in this one. I do think Florida State has a little bit more of an edge there. And with it being at home, I do favor them to probably pull away. But I don't think this is I think the spread is lower than a lot of people expected. And I think it's a realistic spread at this point. So, I'm looking forward to a really good one.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good game. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So yep. Well, Bobby thank you
Petrino's
for...
First
What's that?
Bobby Petrino said his first time coaching at Florida State, so that's another little thing that he's never been there. But Louisville's got a couple guys on their staff that's been there, because Kobe Smith grew up right there, and obviously Terrell Buckley. So that's an interesting little twist there, too.
Yeah.
I wish we had more time to talk about.
Interesting. Yeah, well, either way, thank you so much, Jody, for joining us. And again, my guest has been Jody Demling from CardinalAuthority.com and the Cardinal Insider Radio Show. He's got to run away for an important press conference here, but thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples and, of course, Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a Vsporto channel. Thanks for listening. Look forward to talking to you again soon. I made this.